Tango Tango Papa 1997, August 26, 2017.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Schertz, Texas. So as I record this, this is after the hurricane made landfall. I don't remember the name of the hurricane. It was a male name this time. It hit Rockport, Texas. And so I think it's kind of, it did a lot of damage specifically to Rockport, Texas. And then right now it's just, it's kind of raining and a little bit windy. I don't know, the winds are maybe, they were earlier, they were in the 30s, and I think maybe they're supposed to get up into the 40s, at least where I'm at. Now, Schertz, Texas is near San Antonio area. So I was home for the past several days. I came back to work actually yesterday. So I unloaded early this morning at up at Lancaster, Texas, near Dallas, in the Dallas area. And then I unload here in the morning here at Schertz, Texas. And it looks like after that I may have to pick a load up near here from another driver, and then that delivers, that would be, let's see, tomorrow Sunday, so that would deliver early Monday with two drops in Houston. So don't know if, you know, what, if the, you know, if this hurricane weather, you know, when it's going to continue, it, you know, because it really wasn't too much of a problem. You know, I guess it could be if it just, if it continues to rain. It's not ever really rained super hard, at least where I've been. There's not a whole lot of standing water, and it, you know, so it's just been kind of wind, you know, kind of a lighter rain, but it's sort of wind driven. And so I was able to make it here pretty much with no problem. So, we'll see. But of course the wind was coming kind of from the north, so it, you know, I wasn't really, you know, if it was a side wind like that, you know, 30-40 miles an hour, that's more problematic. So we'll see what that's like once I leave here. I think the guy is supposed to get the load here late tomorrow afternoon, so we'll see what the weather, you know, which way the weather, wind is blowing from, and if it's going to continue, or at that point it may have dissipated at least somewhat. It probably will keep raining, but the wind may have dissipated at that point. So we'll just see what happens. But that's going to be probably about 24 hours from now. So, but anyway, it I don't know. I think I've gotten the impression that they really hyped the storm up a lot. You know, like they seem to hype everything up anymore in the media. And, of course, if you live right on the coast and, you know, where the thing hits at Rockport, Texas, and it's, you know, you're living on the coast, you can expect hurricanes. It's going to happen. Sooner or later, a hurricane's going to come if you live in a place like that. So you have to be prepared accordingly, you know. So, But anyway, they hyped it all up, and they've made it seem like it's the end of the world, I'm sure, if you watch the media. And, of course, the reason they do that is, you know, get people all emotional, and then they'll watch your coverage, and, of course, then you watch the ads. And that's what it's all about, is get you to watch the ads. get the viewership up so that, they can charge more more money for the ad rates. So, but yeah, look at the radar, use your common sense, and if you live along the coast and there's a hurricane, you might want to go inland or something. Go, you know. Don't try to, you know, I wouldn't try to tough it out. If I lived in a hurricane-prone area, you know, right along in the path of it, you know, along the coast especially, then I would not try to tough that out. You know, it's the same kind of thing. People build houses next to a river, and then periodically the river's going to flood. And why do you do that? Why do you build in a floodplain? That's stupid. So, I don't know. It's crazy. So, anyway, I'm here and waiting, at this point, waiting to deliver the load that I have early tomorrow morning, like I said. So, it's been almost a month since the last podcast. I had really kind of intended to record one sooner than this, but of course when I made it home I had the best of intentions of recording a podcast, and then of course that never happened, and then so now I'm back at work and it's finally happening. So, but it's, as I've said many times, it's all about motivation, and if I am not motivated to do it, I'm just not motivated to do it, and that's kind of really all there is to it. So I continue to I continue to not watch the news. I do look at headlines and read a few stories here and there. And I pretty much know what's going on. You know, you have all this emotional stuff that's, you know, trying to emotionalize people, whip their emotions up, get them all upset. And the thing is, someone, anything, is able to whip up, put you into an emotional state, they own you. Emotions equals insanity. If you're prone to becoming emotional for whatever reason, you have a mental illness. But the thing is, you think that it's normal. They tell you, oh, emotions are normal. Oh, that's what makes us human, is that we're emotional. No, it doesn't. That makes you insane. And being a human being, a real human being, does not mean that you're insane. You know, why do they, you know, they, most people have this, if you're honest with yourself, you sort of, at one time or other, the thought has gone through your head that you hate your fellow human beings, that there's something terribly wrong with them. You hate them. And that's another trick. You know, it's kind of like hating resenting your parents. You resent your fellow human beings. Well, yeah, I don't care what it is, if you resent something, meaning that, you know, you're like, you know, in your own mind, you're God, you know, kind of passing judgment. You could just, you know, kind of kill things, hurl the mental thunderbolts and put things to death with your thoughts. That type of thing. That's the best description I can come up with, you know, sort of for resentment. Because it seems like such a little innocent thing, and of course you're told your entire life that it's normal to do that. And of course it's not. That's the beginning of insanity. And so we see our fellow human beings around us, and we think, oh, well, they're all crazy. Human beings are crazy. I hate them. And you know, you can't do that. You're hating God's creation. Even though God doesn't want you to be emotional, you have the ability to be emotional. He's given you that ability. But of course, we're given, for, you know, that's where the free will idea comes in. we don't have to do the right thing. We're given the choice, and then we're able to choose to do the right thing. And that's a very different thing than having to do the right thing. Then, you know, animals have to follow their instincts. They don't have any choice. They have to. Intuition is to man is the same as instincts are to animals. We don't have to follow our intuition. So therefore, in order to have free will, we have to be given the ability to rebel, to sort of play God in our own minds. But of course, it has, therefore, if you think about it in the right way, if we take that opportunity to play God in our own minds, that has to lead to sort of a chaos. It has to lead to unraveling. Because it's a departure from the order that God created, that God creates, that God sustains. And so that's why we're on our little earth here. We're very well isolated, pretty well isolated from the rest of the universe. And, so we've got our little kind of chaos that we can play around with for a time, for a season. And of course, that's where salvation comes in. You can be saved from that. God will take the emotions away. That's where we get into trouble. That's where we depart from sanity. But it starts with resentment, whatever that is. As I've said many times, I know what it is. It's hard for me to put it into words, but I can talk around it. It's up to you to recognize it. And if you really are a searching person, then you will be able to recognize it. And in fact, at some point, you don't need me anymore to keep telling you. You can go off on your own journey. So, lots of chaos going on, but the best thing to do is just to turn it off. And I know a lot of people, I tell them that, and then they turn it on anyway. And I think that they kind of like, they seem to like kind of fumbling around in the emotional, in the emotional mess and the emotional vortex that's created. And of course, they can, then you have the thing where you can feel the resentment again as you listen to these things, as you watch these so-called news presentations. Because they're not giving you the truth. They're giving you just enough information so you'll come to their conclusion. And their conclusion is that the world's going to hell in a handbasket. You should hate your fellow human beings. where human beings are just pond scum and should be eliminated. And that's what the thing they try to perpetuate. And of course, then that leads to a justification of genocide. It leads to the idea that it's okay to kill your baby if it's just an unwanted byproduct of sex. You know, you just want to have fun and get the good sexual feeling and just kill the baby. You know, it's just unwanted tissue mass. And of course, that's a bottomless pit, because who's to say then, well, we'll just kill this group of people and call it a retroactive abortion. Or we can just kill parents can just kill their kids after they, let's say the parents have a kid, and the kid's, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, and then they decide, well, we don't want little Johnny or little Susie anymore. Let's just, make it legal to do them in. Because they're not going to have they don't have a mommy and daddy. They're just the mommy and daddy. It's inconvenient for them, so they'll be better off dead. Just send them off and do away with them. After all, what's the difference between that and abortion? There really isn't any. But it's a progression into the pit. Same idea, kill off the old people. Euthanasia, you know, come up with a nice little name for it. First time I heard that, you know, I was watching some 60 Minutes TV program, and it's been many years ago, and they were talking about euthanasia, you know, and I thought, well, what the hell is that? What the hell is euthanasia? Is that young people in Asia, you know? but it's a ridiculous idea. You know, kill off people, the old people, because they're useless and they're inconvenient. Let's just kill them off. It's a progression into the pit of hell. It really is. So, you know, the question is, do you enjoy living in the chaos? Do you enjoy being sensitive to the external chaos around you? To, you know, you're the people that are crazy, do you enjoy being sensitive to them? Because that's really what it is. You're kind of sensitized to the insanity, to the people, the drama queens and drama kings around you. Do you enjoy that? You getting something out of that? You think you're getting some value out of it by resenting it? You know, and you get this momentary illusion that you're really God hurling the thunderbolts, that you could just strike these people dead with your thoughts. So that's, and of course, that's a lie. Because every time you do that, you become more guilty. Every time you do that, you have a bigger conscience. That conscience is there to remind you that you're wrong. And so every time you do that, you have to try harder. You have to come up with something more exotic to try to keep that conscience at bay. So, you know, the overeating, the food has to become more exotic. The sex has to be more exotic, more kinky. The drugs have to be more exotic, etc. The entertainment's got to be more exotic, more enthralling. you know, the music's got to be more of whatever, you know, is to the point where it's not even recognizable as music almost, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that's why drugs have, you know, or anything like that that you're imbibing have a diminishing return to try to mitigate conscience. Drive a wedge between yourself and your conscience. You become more and more and more like being sensitive. I don't, and I won't. And so, you know, I mention it once in a while. If you go to my website, truckertompodcast.com, up at the top, there's a link that says meditation. Click on that link. There's, I think, 4 files that are hosted on my server, MP3 files. You can download them, and basically, that's a will teach you a very simple meditation technique. A couple of the files, I think 2 or 3 of them, are by Roy Masters. And it's a very simple meditation technique to teach you how to bring your awareness out of your thoughts. You know, people think that they are their thoughts. You think, oh, well, I'm whatever my thoughts are, that's me. No, it's not you. We have an awareness that's separate from that. Most people go around drowning in their own thoughts. You know, like a squirrel, it just goes around and around and around. Squirrel cage. Like a rat running in a squirrel cage. Like a mouse running in a squirrel cage. That goes nowhere. It just spins around and around and around. Burning up its energy. Wearing itself out. So that meditation, if you learn how to practice that meditation, it's a very simple meditation technique. You can actually prove to yourself that you, the awareness, are not your thoughts. And it's, learn to be in the present moment. And it's a very peaceful place to be. The present moment is an incredibly peaceful place to be. And the idea is that you learn to be in that present moment forever. And so, in that present moment, God actually takes the emotions away. And then it's possible, you know, I look at the world, I see the chaos, I see the all of the crazy emotional people, and it's as if I'm in a different, completely different space. It's as if I'm in a completely different, almost a different, an alternate universe, where I see all of the chaos, but somehow it doesn't affect me. In the sense it does not, it cannot penetrate the peaceful place that my awareness is in. You know, it's the Bible verse, be in the world but not of it. Well, if you're participating in the emotions. If you're participating in the drama, whether you like it or not, you're of the world. You're a slave of the world. And if you can learn to come out of your thoughts via that meditation, learn to come out of your thoughts, then and you can't just do it once and call it good. It doesn't work that way. It's a more of a slow analog process. You can kind of find a place where even though there's lots of, you know, chaotic people around, and I still have to, you know, I interact with people, but I'm not emotionally affected by them one way or the other. It may sound, I don't know what it would sound like to someone on the, you know, it may sound like, you know, I'm just talking gibberish. But really, if you, until you've begun to actually practice the meditation, then, you know, it, you know, what I'm talking, you know, the things I'm saying may sound like gibberish. You may think I'm just talking in circles. It doesn't make any sense to you. So that meditation is there on my website. Give it a try. It's, you know, it's a very simple technique. I can't promise that it'll help everybody, but it will. I do believe it will help most people, especially if you're a person that's actually searching. You're one of those people that's actually searching for the truth. Then give it a try, and then it's up to you to. If you find that it helps you after the very first time, you find that it helps you, then it's up to you to continue with it. You know, you can't just do it once and call it good. It doesn't work that way. There really is, you know, I think one of the biggest disservices that preachers do, Christian preachers, they talk about being saved, and you pray the prayer, and you're all of a sudden you're saved. But then for some reason they go on sinning. You know, and you know, you ask these people, "Do you sin?" And well, yeah, of course we're continuing to sin. Well, then what are you saved from? God doesn't save you as you are. God saves you from what you are. So He saves you from the emotional mess, but you have to meet Him halfway. You can't just be, you know, kind of wallowing around in all of the emotional drama and expect him to save you. You have to have the want to. And that's kind of a mystery as to why some people really are searching people and other people don't seem to care. Other people are not, you know, and I don't know what that mechanism is. It's more than just, you know, some genetic mechanism, that's for sure. So anyway, that's there. Give it a try. As I say, it's up to you. If you want to get away from all of the drama and not be a slave anymore of all this emotional turmoil, then give that meditation a try. And if, as I say, if you find that it helps you, then it's up to you to continue with it. You know, it's not going to, you know, it's not going to make you a perfect person. It's not going to, you know, get rid of all your problems. You still will make mistakes. But what it does give you is, you know, there's a peace that, and a joy that passes all understanding. It's a very interesting thing, and I can, you know, those words are from the Bible, you know, so I think peace that passeth all understanding. What do those words mean? You know, it's one thing to read the words and, you know, oh, here's the definition, here's the dictionary definition of those words, this is what it must mean. That's different than what it actually, what the, you want to experience the actual thing. It's kind of like the difference that, you know, I've used the analogy before. You know, you can live your entire life in a dungeon, you know, and you have a light bulb and you've got books about the sun, you know, and pictures of the sun, you know, and you got, but all you have is a 100-watt light bulb or whatever. You can kind of imagine what it is, but until you go out, come out of your dungeon and step out into the sun, and then you experience it. Then you know what you know what it is. But until then, it's something that's sort of theoretical. Something you've not really experienced. And real salvation is not an emotional experience. It's the opposite. God takes the emotion away. So anyway, I have a voice file from Joel. And I haven't listened to it yet. He sent it, this is about probably 3 weeks ago. He sent it, so I want to play that. I don't know what he's going to be talking about, but I'm, you know, may end up, depending on what he's talking about, stopping and starting it, and responding. Also, a few days ago, there was the, before I played Joel's file, there was the solar eclipse. I was actually at home whenever that was going on. I've seen solar eclipses before. I didn't bother getting the glasses, you know, the special solar eclipse glasses. I know what it looks like. I know, you know, you can watch the thing online, you know, but I did what I did do. When it was going on, I had a piece of paper, and I, you know, poked a hole through the piece of paper in the center of the, you know, 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, poked a hole in it with a paper clip. And then you can use that, you know, as a projector, hold it up above some sort of, excuse me, flat surface. You know, in the sort of in the shade, flat surface, and then you can, you know, you actually, that little pinhole sort of acts like a lens, and then you can see the disk of the sun with the moon sort of taking a bite out of it. So where I was at in Northwest Arkansas, we had, you know, it was like 18% of the disk was not covered up, so it was mostly covered up, but there was still about 18% left, and so it was still daylight. It was just a, you know, sort of reduced light. You could tell that it was darker than, you know, somewhat darker than it normally would be when the sun was out. And then the other thing that is noticeable is that you could stand in the remaining sunlight, you know, it really wasn't hot. You didn't really feel the heat of the sun. It was it kind of took the power out of it. But as I say, there was only about 18% of the disk that was remaining. So you had to go from where I was. If you went straight north up to St. Joseph, Missouri, then which I think is probably, I don't know, 400 miles north, 375 miles north of where I was. Then you would, you know, St. Joseph, Missouri was one of the places where, you know, they had totality. And it's just a solar eclipse, you know, and I don't know. They hyped that up, too. They really hyped that up. I mean, it's something to see, I guess, if you're there, but I don't think that, you know, it's just a solar eclipse, and nothing, I don't know, they really hyped it up. Some people, you know, you want to, you know, put some giant significance on it or whatever, and it's just a shadow. You know, we have shadows all the time. We have cloud eclipses constantly. You know, you could say we have an eclipse every night because we're in the Earth's shadow, you know, the Earth's own shadow. Every night, you know, every 24 hours we're in the Earth's shadow, and it's called nighttime. So, you know, it's kind of an end, but, you know, people hyped it up too much. And I think some of the people were, you know, the totality only lasts just a few minutes, and I think some people were disappointed. But the thing that I found kind of frightening was that mass numbers of people were driving to these different rural places to where they could, you know, kind of experience the solar eclipse. You know, and that's kind of weird. You know, because they sort of bought in, you know, that tells me they sort of, you know, kind of bought into the hype that it's a once-in-a-lifetime event. Whatever. You know, or they, you know, attach some spiritual, almost a spiritual significance to it, and it's not. I mean, you know, that's really rather superstitious. You know, if you want to sort of think about it that way, it's kind of almost superstitious, you know, or an emotional thing that, you know, just a shadow passing, you know, the sun or, you know, the moon shadow, you know, moon passing, causing a shadow and, you know, cutting off the sunlight why is that an emotional thing? It's really not. It's kind of silly, actually, to become emotional about it. So, anyway, go ahead and play Joel's comment. So, here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. Finally getting your podcast, and was listening to the conversation, the latest, on the end of the show about Tesla. You're responding to, I don't remember, I think it was Jeremy. But anyway, the Tesla 3 being out, doesn't really, you know, plus, you know, that doesn't really make me want to go buy one, even though it's right there, right about what I paid for my Traverse. And the reason is the size of the Model 3 isn't appropriate for what I was looking for. Now, if it was a second car, like for example, later on down the road, when it's time to replace the Cruise, that just might be something that I do, you know. But first off, that's going to be when my loan's paid off, not before then. And second, the whole thing there is the electric with the Traverse. Or versus the Traverse. If I wanted something the same size that my Traverse is, it would have been a whole lot more. That would have been the Model X, which I was. We have one of those Tesla I hesitate to call it a showroom, but basically we're up at Easton Town Center, which is a mall slash open air mall. It's quite different. It's more upscale than most malls are. Which must be why McDonald's isn't there anymore. There used to be a huge McDonald's there with a play area and all that when my son was little. That has since gone away. It is no longer there. But anyway, in the place of that, though, is this Tesla place, which basically they have a Model S, a Model X. They didn't have Model 3s because they weren't around yet, but they had at least two Model S's and a Model X sitting out front of the store. And you can actually climb in it, play around with the LCD, stuff like that. Could not test drive them there. But the Model X was gorgeous. But it's a $100,000 vehicle. That doesn't count what would happen to my electric. My electric bill would go up, plus I would have to pay to have a charger installed in the house because you can't always just go to a supercharger, you know? So you'd want to plug it in and have it charged overnight. So it would be a significant cost above what my Traverse would have been. Easily double the cost of the Traverse if I went with the X. Okay? No. I'm just not going to do it. The 3 is more in my price range, but it's not big enough. And I can just tell it by looking at it. It's just not a big enough vehicle. Okay? But the thing that I don't get is the government subsidies on this thing. I understand they're trying to lessen our dependence on oil, and they're trying to promote, you know, environmentally friendly transportation. But the thing here is a Tesla actually any more environmentally friendly than the Traverse? Truth is there, it really isn't. All we're doing is moving the pollution source. All the rest of the things about the Tesla are pretty much the same as my Traverse, with some exceptions. For example, there's no oil changes in it. There's still fluids in it. You still have a transmission fluid probably somewhere in it. You still probably have other consumables, but the maintenance costs should be lower. That is, unless something goes wrong with the electric motor, and it's probably going to be much higher. So, you know, until it's more commonplace, until I can, when I'm traveling, pull in a gas station and fill up a tank or battery in less than 2 minutes, you know, which, you know, or 5 minutes, I should say. It probably takes me total, you know, by the time I pay for things, go and grab a drink or something in the store, convenience store, it probably takes me about 20 minutes at most during most fuel stops. Okay. For a Tesla, that's not going to happen. For a Tesla, an electric car with current technology, you're not going to charge that thing in 20 minutes. So, until then, I don't see electric cars taking off. At least for the kind of purposes I bought my Traverse for. One big reason I bought the Traverse was that the Traverse had enough space in it, for one. And for two, it was very comfortable when you compare it to the things like the Cruise that I had. You know, it's, there's a lot more room in it. just for cargo and people. And for two, I should be able to drive this thing comfortably down to Texas next summer, which is a 15-hour drive from Columbus. And at worst, I'll have to stop. Maybe twice for gas, I'm thinking. I have to sit there and calculate the mileage. I get roughly 18 miles to the gallon, which is not great on the Traverse, but it's acceptable. So I'll have to probably stop at least twice, I'm guessing, about every 3 hours or 3 to 4 hours or so. And so, like I said, probably twice, maybe three times. With the Tesla, the range of the Tesla, I don't know what the range is currently, but the one range I heard reported was about 100 miles, which is not enough. It's not enough. You know, if in that case, if I drove a Tesla from here, like one of my first trips I took with the Traverse was to the Cleveland area. And it was roughly 2.5 hours, okay? And I would have actually – I could do that and not stop. So basically I could just get in the car, turn on some music, drive the 2.5 hours, no problems. No need to stop unless you had a bio break or something like that, you know. But with the Tesla, I would have had to stop between here and Cleveland. You know, if the range is still what I think it is, which is right – 100 miles. I may be wrong. So that would probably have taken what would have been a 2.5 hour drive and turn it more like into an 8 hour drive because I would have had to stop for 4 to 6 hours for the charge. So that's a problem. That's a problem. I can't use a Tesla like I would use my Traverse. You know, I just can't. Even if I had the Model X, I can't. Now, I will say this. One thing that is encouraging to me, and it's going to take a while, but I think eventually that a solar cell will eventually get efficient enough that it can charge that that Tesla while it's moving. All right, so imagine if you had a roof with super efficient solar cells, you know, and I say super efficient.
Okay, well, let me go ahead and interrupt. As far as the Teslas go, they have the current models, and then this Model 3, I think the base Model 3, which is not on sale yet, and won't be for a while, is supposed to have 240 miles of range. The one with the upgraded battery, the more premium one, which is a much more expensive vehicle, you know, if you know the average person specs it out, it's going to be probably around $55,000 to $59,000 for the one that you actually want, that's got the longer range and, you know, kind of the nicer options. That one is going to have what did they say, a range of 310 or something like that, 310 miles. Now, as far as the current S's and X's, the charge times are actually pretty quick. They're relatively quick. So they say that you can get like half of the, I think this is true, half of the battery capacity within 30 minutes. So but of course I think it gets to 50%, then the rate starts to slow down to kind of protect the battery. So, and they don't want you charging it more than about 80%. And that you can charge it to 100%, but then it's a little bit, you wear the battery out faster. you're going to get better results if you just, you know, maybe when it gets, don't let it drop below 20% or charge it beyond 80%. And so if you can kind of live within that range, then you know, it's the battery, you know, you don't have much battery degradation. So of course it's with the Tesla system. So if you've watched any of these, I've watched a ton of videos, you know, the people that have their Teslas and are taking them on the long trips or whatever. And they do seem to stop a lot, but the thing tells you, you know, the built-in software, the navigation software, tells them where to stop at, you know, where the superchargers are, and tells them how much, you know, how long they need to charge, approximately, you know, maybe 20 minutes or whatever, to get it back up to whatever percentage, so they have enough to make the comfortably make the next supercharger stop. So they do seem to stop an awful lot, more so than I'd be stopping, you know, with a traditional vehicle. And the thing is, if you stop a lot, that's what kills your time. If you're trying to make time, you know, like I do in the truck all the time, the way to make time on a trip is not to stop. Don't stop. Sometimes you have to stop, but if you stop here and you stop there and you keep stopping, before you know it, you're not making any time, you know, because then it all that adds up pretty dramatically. Every time you stop, you know, you're adding minutes, you know, and then those minutes can end up adding up to hours extra. So those two things. Now, as far as the Teslas go, you know, these people seem to be really enamored of them and that have them. And I'm sure they're very nice. I've seen them. People drive by with them, you know, a few feet away. I've seen them, and they look nice. You know, I think a lot of it's just, it's almost like a little status symbol type thing. But, and of course it is, because the very rich people are able to afford the you know, kind of ridiculous prices for, you know, those vehicles. $100,000 or $150,000, you know, if you option it out, which is insane for a vehicle. Unless you have that kind of money, and then, you know, more power to you. But I don't know. There's a certain appeal to them, but I don't know. I was kind of infatuated for a while, and then that kind of quickly passed. And I still find the whole topic sort of interesting, but it's probably not practical on a mass scale. Where's all that electricity going to come from? You know, you're going to have to, they keep talking about, well, we'll have, all vehicles will be electric. That's not, it's really not practical. You know, let's imagine that you try to have these electric trucks, you know, so supposedly Tesla's going to have an electric semi, you know, and the rumor is that it's only going to have about 300 miles worth of range. Well, that's not enough. It might be enough if you're just you know, a bakery or something, and you're delivering something, you know, like a day cab type thing, and you're delivering something locally, then maybe, you know, then it might work. Or if you're, you know, a truck that's in Hawaii or something, it might work, because they can't go very far. But the type of driving I do, I drive maybe, you know, fill up and drive 500 miles, and I don't have time to stop. Just imagine how long it would take to charge a, you know, massive truck battery. And imagine, you know, and then they're thinking, well, you know, the truck stops will put in all these chargers. Well, the truck stop's going to have its own coal or nuclear plant. Okay, imagine the amount of electricity. The grid isn't going to support that. You know, you don't realize how much juice that would take. To you know, charge mass numbers of massive batteries would take a lot of juice, an incredible amount of juice, and that's more than the grid can deliver. Sorry, hate to burst the bubble, but It's sort of an interesting idea, electric vehicles. It's kind of an interesting idea, but not, it doesn't scale. I'm sorry, but it just doesn't scale very well. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about, and you haven't touched on it at all, but maybe you will, because there's about half of the file that's left to play of Joel's file. That's the self-driving. I've been skeptical about this idea of autonomous vehicle, self-driving vehicle, computer driving the vehicle. I've been very skeptical about that all along, and I remain skeptical. I don't see it happening. The only places it can happen is, if you've managed to sort of create a closed system and eliminate, as many variables as possible. I've used this example in the past. Let's say you have a warehouse that's, got a kind of an automated storage and retrieval system. Then, it's almost like the old jukeboxes that had the records in them. Sometimes you still see them. You'll see them in a restaurant, kind of a novelty thing. But, you punch the thing and you tell it which record you want to play, like B17 or whatever it is. You punch that in and then you see the mechanisms. It selects the record, like a 45 RPM record. And then it puts it on the turntable and the needle comes down and it plays it. And then when it's finished, the tone arm returns and the mechanism takes the record off the turntable, spindle, and puts it back where it belongs. Well, that's an automated system, but it's very mechanized. It's very mechanical. If you put the wrong... The system doesn't even know what the music is playing. It's just going, because you told it to play B17, well, then it plays B17. And it puts it back, and the only thing that connects B17 with whatever the song is that the person that stocked that labeled it correctly. So that's, it may seem like a neat system, but it's completely self-contained. That's why there's glass. There's nothing that, no bugs hopefully can get in there. So hopefully it's sealed. There's no dust. Or the dust is minimized. No insects can get in there to kind of gum up the works. Keep the variables down to, to the absolutely known quantity. Then the mechanization can work just fine. So same theory would be if you had a mechanized warehouse and you told it, hey, I want, here's my part. I want you to put this away and then later I'll retrieve it. Same type of idea. But in the real world, there's too many variables. I'm sorry, but there's just too many variables. And so the self-driving, they've hyped it up. A lot of people want to believe it. They want to believe. Sort of like the X-Files, I want to believe. They had that, Mueller had that, the poster, I want to believe, in his office, basement office or whatever. Well, they want to believe, and so they want to believe the hype. It's not going to happen. And now, there's been articles that have come out in the last couple of days that... Elon Musk, he kept saying, well, we basically have it working. We just need to refine it and the regulators have to approve it. That was a lie. It's not it. They don't have it. Companies frequently, especially software companies, frequently do that. They'll come out and say, we have this product and it's going to go on sale, by X date. We're going to have it. Elon Musk has said, we're going to have a car that will go coast to coast. It's going to drive from Los Angeles to New York. I think that, or either that, or he said Los Angeles to Washington, D.C., or whatever it was. before 2018, we're going to do that. And he recently said, we're still on track to do that. No, they're not. It ain't going to happen. Mark my words. Not happening. As he said, it's going to do it completely autonomously. No human interference needed. Ain't happening. You know, he sold all these vehicles, and some of the people went ahead and, oh, I'll pay my $9,000 so I can get the self-driving. It's not available yet, but it will be. Elon said so. Ain't happening. That's my opinion. Ain't happening. Then they have these things where, oh, we have the platoons of trucks, you know, where you have got, you know, one truck, the guy's driving the truck, and then you have all these other following trucks. And they're just mimicking whatever the truck is ahead, you know, and of course there's a human being controlling the front truck. And then all the other ones are following it. Well, all fine and dandy. There's a big problem with that. There aren't very many, I'll tell you, this is my experience, I've been doing this for years and years, there are very few loads of anything that where you have several truckloads of whatever the product is that goes from point A to warehouse, you know, from warehouse A to warehouse B, wherever it is. There's very few loads that are all loaded simultaneously that all go to the same place. So if you want that, it's called a railroad. Railroad's been around for years. There's a lot of trailers that are hauled on rail. They go to the thing and, you know, they go through the rail system and they get switched out and they end up in the city they're supposed to be in. And then a truck comes and picks that container up and delivers it wherever it goes. That system already exists. And yet, it's not a flexible enough system. The vast majority of freight is still hauled by individual trucks on the highway system because the rail system just isn't that practical. It's okay for certain things, but it's not okay for everything. Sorry. Real world kind of intruding. Then you have the idea, the trucks could, if they're on the freeway, then they could just be set so that they all platoon, get better fuel economy or whatever. You know, so here I am, I have to drive from where I'm at here in Schertz, Texas to Houston, Texas, and of course there's going to be other trucks on the road. Well, would my truck all of a sudden just kind of take over and get right up behind another truck without, you know, I wouldn't put up with that. What if a tire blows out? Tires do blow out, by the way. What if a truck runs over a piece of debris? It happens all the time. There's debris in every roadway. You know, so that's just not practical. It's stupid. They're doing showing it to the media. Oh look, we got autonomous. Looky. It doesn't have any real world application. It really doesn't. The load I have right now, I picked it up yesterday when I left. I picked it up yesterday afternoon in Rogers, Arkansas. Two drops. First one, you know, and it's frozen, you know, some kind of frozen chicken product or, you know, fresh chicken product. First part of it, the bulk of the load, at least two-thirds or three-quarters of the load went to the place in Lancaster, Texas, Dallas area. then the rest of it goes here. How would you do that with an autonomous vehicle? How would you get, you know, or you come up with these drone ideas or all these silly little ideas that people say, oh, it's going to, the drones are going to take over, deliver the stuff. Well, is a drone going to have some sort of giant refrigeration unit that keeps it cold for 2 days while it's delivered? I don't think so. The ideas just don't work. I mean, you know, you have the real world. You know, and it's fine to dream your dreams. But some of the stuff, you can't, just because you think you can put the power of your mind behind whatever it is and you're going to achieve whatever it is, there's still practical, you know, we live in a practical world. You know, I was listening to a podcast earlier today and they were talking about, you know, all of the things that Google's done, you know, as far as, you know, all these energy related things. You know, they've tried this and they had their idea that they were going to deploy balloons and have the, you know, free internet for everybody. Well, that kind of fizzled. I think Facebook's, you know, tried to do the same thing. Fizzle. Where is it? Where's it at? How's that working out? Made some headlines. People got all dreamy-eyed. Didn't happen. There's lots of examples of that. So anytime someone hypes something up like that, you know, whether it's a solar eclipse or an electric car or whatever it is, you can bet that, you know, people's emotions are being played with. Global warming, another one. So anyway, I could go on and on, but let's listen to the rest of Joel's comment.
Current technology, no way. You'd have to have an array the size of your car, or I'm sorry, the size that you have at your house, you would have to have on top of your car, and that's not feasible. All right. But once technology has gotten to the point where you can put solar cells in it, have an actual impact on your range, then I see some good things happen.
Well, let me interrupt once again. Ugly little reality has to rear its head. So, they're able to calculate actually how many watts of solar energy there is per, let's say, a square foot or a square yard. And it may not be as much as you think. There, and I'm looking this up, there actually is, in a square foot, you have 100 watts of solar energy per square foot per hour. That's per hour. You know, so that, you know, and this thing I'm looking at, it says if you assume 12 hours of sun per day, this equates to 438,000 watts per hours per square foot per year. So 100 watts. So you're driving your car, 100 watts of solar energy, or 100 watts that you could. And this is not, you know, because the solar panels maybe are. The best ones, maybe 20%. I don't know. A lot of them, the ones I have at home are probably, I think the efficiency percentage is maybe 17%, 18%. So that's, you know, even if you could get 100% efficiency, your car really doesn't have all that much, you know, how big is, you know, how many square feet does your car cover? You know, if you could put a solar thing on the roof and a solar thing on the the hood and the trunk area. What does that, what would that cover? It's not that much, you know, so, you know, you would have to have a whole lot of panels in order to even begin to make a dent in it. So the idea of putting a solar panel on your car, you know, and I listen to these podcasts and these people, oh, that's such a neat idea. Well, it's stupid. It's pie in the sky. And the laws of physics, it ain't going to happen. Because, you know, those cars are consuming a hell of a lot more than 100 watts. And that's assuming that you could get it up to 100% efficiency. So, you know, you do the math on that, and it just doesn't work out so well. So it's not going to, you know, the idea that you're going to just be able to drive your car and, you know, and have it boosted by some sort, you know, the amount that it would be boosted by solar panels would be insignificant. It would be minuscule. It wouldn't even, it's not doing you any good at all. You might as well not even mess with it, because it just adds cost and complexity, and it doesn't do anything. So not gonna, you know, because it's limited by what the sun is actually, what's actually present in the sunlight. So, you know, as I say, you know, some people think, oh, well, we'll just make, you know, technology's going to improve. Well, it can only get to, you can only get to 100%, and 100% still ain't good enough.
So if the solar cells were efficient enough on top of the car to charge the battery, or at least keep, like, for example, if you started with a full battery, all right, if it can at least keep it at that level, at least until the clouds come, then your range could be, I won't say infinite, but could be that or close to that. You know, there's a lot that has to happen yet. We're not there yet. We're not there yet. And the Tesla itself, well, it's a very nice vehicle, very interesting vehicle, very interesting technology behind it. It's just not going to happen for probably in our lifetimes, maybe in my sons. But what's more interesting to me on the Tesla, and can be adapted to other vehicles, is the driving technology. My Traverse actually has some of something similar to, it doesn't automatically drive it, of course, but it has a lot of the sensors that you're going to need to do that. It is by far, it's one of the biggest cars I've ever had, I'll say that. But by far the easiest car I've ever had so far is lane changing. You know, the version I have, and it's not in every one of them, but the version of the Traverse, 2017 Traverse that I have, has lane assist. All right. And it also has monitoring for your blind spot. So if I look over at my mirror in my car in the Traverse, and the light is lit up, then I know somebody's sitting in my blind spot. If I do the same thing, but also flip my turn signal, and that car's still there, then that little yellow light will flash, telling me don't change, because there's a car there. That's awesome. It makes driving it, makes lane changes in that vehicle so much easier. The other thing that has, it has crash detection. Crash detection and also lane monitoring. If I start to drift out of my lane, there's, in a normal situation when I'm in lane, a little green light on the dash. If I start to drift, the carb will beep and flash that same light, yellow, until I pull the thing back in between two lines. Also awesome. Okay. If the car thinks it's about ready to crash, then it will flash all these red lights and alarms just so that I apply the brake quicker. And if I don't, it will actually start to apply the brakes at some point. These are all things that are pieces, parts of what's needed in order to make self-driving possible. And it's awesome. Okay. Would I ever rely on self-driving? Probably not. Not 100% anyway. But it's nice that it's there. And I personally think one of the best times for using a self-drive system is when you are tired. That way, if you do start to drift off, the car can take over. And what would be nice is if it had some sort of way to detect that you're doing that. That way, it could self... It, actually, what I think should happen is self-drive should be always engaged. But if it's not engaged, it can engage it if it detects that you're starting to drift out of lane. And that way, it can help you drive, assist you to drive. That's what I think is going to be happen first. I think that, and the next... I cut it off in 15 minutes. So, oh, well. But where I was getting down to is car culture itself that we have now is there's convenience to having your own vehicle. And there's folks if you listen to Twit, some of the folks on Twit just have this massive idea that people won't ever buy a car anymore. Well, that's just not going to happen.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. You're talking about the sensors, and those are fine because that gives you more information. You know, as a human being in control of the vehicle, it kind of gives you more information. Some of the things can sort of be automated, like, you know, applying the brake and, you know, and if a crash is, if the system is triggered to the point where a crash is going to happen, and you know, because it doesn't think. I know we use those terms all where the system thinks or whatever. No, it doesn't. It's just a threshold is reached, and then someone's arbitrarily determined that if the threshold is reached, the brakes are going to be applied. And this truck that I'm driving will do that. It will apply the brakes if I get beyond a certain parameter. It detects a vehicle in front of me that's moving, you know, slowly. It can actually apply the brakes. If my vehicle's moving faster than the vehicle in front of me, it can actually apply the brake. That's actually a good thing. So, but as far as all these sensors, great, wonderful. But I still am skeptical as far as the idea that the computer is going to, you're going to be able to build a computer that can drive a vehicle in the real world, in real world situation. I'm very skeptical about that. And, you know, and the idea that you're going to just, I listen to these, you know, I still listen to the Tesla podcasts, and these guys are complaining about, especially this so-called autopilot 2.0. You know, at first Tesla had the, what was the name of that company? It's right on the tip of my tongue. The version one that they had, so-called version one of autopilot, it was using this other company, and I can't think of can't say the name of it right now. But they were using that up until the point whenever, you know, the guy, had his head chopped off in Florida because he had the self-driving thing enabled, and he was watching watching a Harry Potter movie. Whatever, he wasn't paying attention. He was on a two-lane divided highway in Florida, going about 70. He had the thing set for about 75 miles an hour. Truck pulled out in front to cross over, because it wasn't limited access, and the system, the camera didn't detect it, and the car ran right under the semi-trailer and chopped the guy's head off. And right after that, Tesla had a big falling out with this company, and I'm trying to... I'm curious. I'm going to just look that up right now. Let's see. Tesla version Mobileye. I didn't even have to look it up. I just started typing that in, and it came to me suddenly. So they had this, you know, there's this company out there called Mobileye that's been working on this stuff for a long time, and that's what they had, and that actually was a superior system, but they had a, you know, Tesla had a big falling out with them, and they got rid of the Mobileye. And so Tesla's making their own system, so-called Autopilot 2.0, which isn't as good as version 1. And so these guys on this Tesla podcast complain that, you know, although the, you know, they've improved the version 2 software, you know, it's gotten better, but they talk about it ping-ponging in the lane. You know, it'll just kind of drift from one side of the lane to the other, which is very dangerous. You know, you want to get drift up close to a barrier, you know, like a concrete wall. Is that good? If you're in the left lane like that, or you drift over to the close to the car beside you. What if they drift your way? You know, you're going to crash. You don't want to come into contact, I can tell you that. If you're at highway speeds going down the road, you don't want to come into contact with the vehicle beside you. So, and yet these guys, you know, they say, well, as an experiment, I let it drive, you know, and it just kept ping-ponging in the lane. What sort of fool would do that? That's insane. That's insanity. They can't even get the phones to, you know, name me a phone that is perfect. The software always works every time. Name me a phone that does that. Name me any system that's perfect, that never fails. It doesn't exist. Sorry, it doesn't. And then yet, here they are putting their lives in, you know, so that's insanity. Something is, you know, these people have a terrible mental problem, an awful mental illness, and yet they think it's normal. And in fact, they're kind of proud of it. Sort of a badge of honor that they have this really expensive car that can ping pong down the lane. You know, so the self-driving thing, you know, Elon Musk, as I said before, he sold this and it doesn't exist. But those companies will sell things like that. They'll say, hey, we have this. This is working. And then the idea is that puts pressure on the software team to develop it. You know, so that they're able, and in some cases that actually works. They can apply enough pressure that they can actually end up making the system that someone pushed before, you know, and actually make it work. But in the case of self-driving, I'm skeptical. It ain't happening. I don't care what kind of demonstrations they have. If they're under controlled conditions or they're hyped up, it ain't, you know, don't trust it. It ain't happening, folks. Sorry. Now, maybe at some point I'll have to eat my words, but at this point I am skeptical. I do not believe, and I do not want to believe. At best, you're going to end up with some sort of super cruise control. And even that probably isn't going to work very well. You're going to have to remain in charge of it. You know, there's a, I think a Cadillac, I was listening to something earlier today, and they were saying Cadillac in 2018, the 2018 model is going to have some, you know, what they're calling a super cruise control that is probably much like the Tesla system. But if you take your hands off the wheel, then it's going to disengage. As it rightly should. Or let's say you fall asleep. Well, it's something, it's going to disengage. Something's going to happen. But just the simple act of driving down the freeway and you know, kind of passing whenever it can and, you know, getting back in the other lane. That, in the real world, if you got a controlled condition and that's the only vehicle on the freeway, on the road, then yeah, it might work. But if you've got the real world with real world hazards and people coming and going, especially on a busy road, there's too many variables there. It just doesn't work. I'm sorry, they want it to work. I know people want to believe that it'll work. And they think, oh, I can just sleep or read a book or whatever. Ain't happening. And then this idea, the other idea with the, you know, so-called shared cars. Well, right now, I can tell you this. Uber, the whole Uber thing, Uber, Lyft, and whatever else, whatever other ones there are, it's a scam. But it's based on these, you know, kind of desperate people wanting to make money. And so, that, you know, they, Uber basically tricks these people into, they're desperate for money, then maybe they can't get a job for whatever reason. And so they're just kind of duped into burning up their own vehicle to make some, you know, to kind of make extra money. But it's diminishing returns because they're destroying the value of their vehicle to get a little bit of money in their pocket. You know, and then Uber's also invested in self-driving cars. They want to do away with the drivers. Well, they're also, is Uber going to, you know, supply all those vehicles? Who's going to keep them clean? Who's going to clean up the vomit? Go in a public bathroom and you know, any public bathroom of your choice. And you're going to quickly get an idea of what people think of something that doesn't belong to them. Is Uber going to have that investment in all those vehicles and maintain them? I don't think so. Uber's expertise has been, you know, kind of duping people into, you know, doing all the psychological tricks to get the people that own the cars to drive the other people around for a pittance. So it's not a sustainable model. And probably at some point they're going to run out of those people. So, but this dream that these people, and that's all it is it's a theoretical dream that Uber or whoever is going to own have all these cars, and you're just going to be able to take your phone and just magically summon this thing to your wherever you are, and it's just going to, you're going to get in, and it's just going to take you wherever. You won't have to own a vehicle. It's a pipe dream. The only reason that it's working now is because you got the people that own the cars are sort of duped into thinking that they can make money with it, when in fact it's costing them money. And of course, you know, Uber will sell you a car. They'll sell you a car. you know, and you've got to work long, really long hours in order to even try to make it work. And you probably would be better off just getting a job at a convenience store. As you have the car, you're making the payment, you're systematically destroying the value of it by driving it around. So it's not a sustainable system. You know, people think, oh, it's magic. I can just, I have the app on my phone. I can just make that vehicle appear. Taxi services are doing the same thing now. So it's not, there's nothing special about that. It's just the, you know, you're duping someone into doing it cheap. And as I say, that's not sustainable. So therefore, it's kind of a scam. So we're preying on desperate people that need money. It's almost like a pawn scheme, you know, go pawn whatever it is out of your house because you need some money to pay the rent with because you gambled it all away or whatever. You know, and then if you, I know a lot of people, oh, I'll use the Uber system. Well, you know, you're guilty. You know, you use the Uber deal, then you're taking advantage of that person's situation. You're helping them to destroy the value of their vehicle. And even though they might seem happy and willing, you're kind of participating in a bad system. So I've never used Uber. And knowing what I know now, I wouldn't. Well, I guess I would if that was the only alternative and I absolutely had to, maybe I would, but, you know, those situations don't happen. They just don't happen, at least, you know, with what I do, those situations don't happen. If I need a ride, I'm able to get it otherwise. Either a friend will give me a ride or I'll pay for it or the company pays for it or whatever. Or even rent a car. So, anyway, but mark my words, the self-driving thing ain't going to happen. I'm very, very skeptical about it. It's lots of hype. Lots of media hype, get people all excited, get them all upset. Ain't gonna happen. So, anyway, think I better be cutting this off. Hope everyone is having a great weekend, because this is the weekend. Today's Saturday. Tomorrow's Sunday. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.
Does your life suck? Is it a living hell to be you? Do you ever wish you could just end it all? Or do you have that pesky aging parent, nagging wife, or insolent brat of a kid you wish you could just eliminate? If so, know that you are not alone. Planned Parenthood proudly announces a new business unit, Planned Parenthood Death Centers. At Planned Parenthood Death Centers, we can help you overcome life's mistakes. At Planned Parenthood Death Centers, we believe that every life should be a planned and wanted life. Planned Parenthood Death Centers, coming soon to a location near you.
All services must be prepaid in advance, cash only.